This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey everybody, Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. Good to have you here. You know, we are talk radio for the professional auto service aftermarket. Don't forget, listen to learn just one thing. And today, I guarantee you, you're going to learn an awful lot. Very distinguished members of the automotive aftermarket with me. A friend of mine for a bunch of years, Dr. John Passante. Hello, John.
Hello, Carm. Good to be with you.
Golly, I'll never forget when I attended what they call today Leadership 2.0. It was called 2010 at the time. John, and you came in and spoke to us, and you've probably never missed one in the last 20 years, I bet.
Almost 30.
I was being kind. Anyway, Dr. John's a legacy automotive aftermarket HR professional and the president and CEO of the Organizational Development Group. He's worked with and for some of the biggest names in our industry. Listen to this: Monroe, Tenneco, Delphi, Moog, CarQuest. His resume is so big that it takes up 3 or 4 pages. Likewise, Dr. Thomas Litzinger. Thomas, did I get that right?
Yes, sir, you did, Carm.
AAP. I have that too.
Very nice.
Does your AAP mean the same thing as mine?
I believe it does. It's that industry designation. So thanks, Carm, for having us. It's an honor to be here. Thank you for everything you're doing for our industry. We are very grateful.
Thank you so much. Executive Director Dr. Thomas is and the chair of the University of the Aftermarket at Northwood University, very prestigious college. Dr. Thomas is an award-winning trainer, educator, and automotive aftermarket executive with 30 years in the distribution, manufacturing, and retail in the automotive aftermarket. You know, if your car breaks down, where do you take it? To your locally trusted independent repair shop. What if your shop cannot access the vehicle data and only the manufacturer has access? But who owns the data? You, the vehicle owner, or the manufacturer? Well, join the fight to help support right to repair by completing the form at autocareadvocacy.org/NAPA, which sends a letter to your member of Congress today. Right to repair legislation protects your access to vehicle data and scan tools. This is critically important for the automotive, heavy-duty paint and body industries. So are we going to talk about education? Yeah. Are we going to talk about some real heavy leadership stuff? Sure we are. And I really do want to get into what's going on with the University of the Aftermarket. Love to know what the focus of 2.0 is all about. And here's the really cool thing. I know some service professionals that own shops and technicians that are getting involved in this next level up, Thomas. What's going on with that?
Carm, that's absolutely fabulous. I'll just start by saying, under the University of the Aftermarket, we have 5 pillars. The 5 pillars represent our 101 coursework or our introductory coursework, our Leadership 2.0, and Heavy Duty 2.0, which is tactical leadership. We have our executive leadership programming, which is Infusion, which we'll be hosting in Hamburg, Germany in the first week of June. Then we have our data standards, of course, supporting our ACEs and PIs in the industry and all of these catalog content managers that work so hard behind the scenes. We're developing coursework for them. And then we have our corporate development pillar, which organizations come into us and say, hey, can you develop this for our organization? We want it to kind of look like this. And then we go to our bullpen of speakers and we craft that. So that's kind of what we're up to. Personally, I also attended Leadership 2.0, Carm, met Dr. John there. The experience transformed my life, put me on the trajectory that I'm on today, that I just want to do more. I want to learn more. I want to be this lifelong learner. And Dr. John played a huge role in that. So Dr. John, thank you for all you've done. I'm just very grateful.
So a lifelong learner, Dr. John, a lifelong learner. That's a powerful statement.
Well, Carb, if you think about it, it's interesting because in today's society, every day we read and process words because we're collected. We're connected 24/7, which is both good and bad. When I say the word a lifelong learner, and by the way, instead of calling them service providers, I call them solution providers. When I need my car, which keeps us on the road 24/7, God bless the aftermarket, ladies and men and women that work on those technology, et cetera, they're solution providers. And so as part of leadership, it starts with yourself and say, am I a lifelong learner? And learning means you take some time to try stuff new. And I don't know about you two gentlemen, but early in my life, I had both good and bad experience in learning, where I would have teachers that would embarrass students because they didn't have the right answer in front of the class. And so my cry to the people today about leadership is starting with yourself to be a lifelong learner and to read and to try different things and express to the people you touch every day that learning is not painful. Harken back to my days at Moog Automotive, which I had a wonderful career there with Larry McCurdy, God rest his soul. We introduced something called SAP. And I don't know if you both had experience with SAP.
Would that be the computer software?
Yeah, it changed all the software from everybody to Tom Smiling. And of course, it was seen as a IT project. And some of our employees fought it. And so McCurdy again calls me and he says, okay, John, solve it. I formed a cross-functional team and I set sales, marketing, operations, human resources, distribution, sales at all levels. And I said, we're going to learn together what SAP is all about. We took the fear out of it. We encouraged an environment where it's okay to question. Again, if you look at people today in the aftermarket community, if I'm a new hire, do you encourage me to question what you say to me? Or is there a fear factor? And again, Carmen and Thomas, this gives me gray hair. Only 8% of the human beings reach their potential. And potential is the God-given talents that we have. And I wonder if we open the door and let people know. And I don't like the term learning disability because we all learn differently. I think about the people that made a difference in my life that helped me instead of making me feel incompetent or not enough or not good enough. And any potential that I've reached is because, yes, I've worked hard at it. And yes, I'm a lifelong.
But you were challenged too. I mean, I think that's a key here. Being challenged.
Yes.
I remember in fifth grade, I couldn't get my 12 times tables right. And my teacher said, Carm, Mr. Capriotto, your dad's going to be very, very disappointed if you don't get this, because if you join the family business and you don't know this, I'll never forget it as long as I live, right? It's how many years ago he challenged me to be better at it. And those, I think, are some great learning moments that come out of our life.
You know, I have a prayer list, if you don't mind, but Sister Bernadine, my eighth grade sister, St. Thomas Aquinas, East Toledo, Ohio. I was a typical eighth grader and a B student. And I was a captain of the basketball team. And every week we got graded on behavior. And if we didn't get a B, we couldn't play basketball on Saturday. So the bell rings and they posted on the door as you left the classroom, an alphabetical order with everybody's name with a grade for the week. So the bell rings Friday afternoon. I'm ready to go home. I walk up to the door, go down the list. John Anthony Passanti, behavior, B minus, 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 minus. All of a sudden, Sister Bernadine says, Mr. Passanti. I said, yes, sister. Close the door, get a chair, and sit in front of my desk. Trust me, didn't say no to Sister Bernadine. So I sit down. She waits for 30 seconds or so, which seems like a long time. She's staring at me and says, Mr. Passanti. I said, yes, sister. What did you learn today? I said, sister, you gave me a break. She said, yes, young man, I did. What are you going to do about it? I said, sister, I will become a student. Mr. Passanti, have a good weekend. I take that with me, Carm. I became a student. I graduated first in the class. At graduation, I got a special award. I walked on the stage, and I'm not ashamed to say I had tears in my eyes. And so did Sister Bernadine. We hugged each other. That's the kind of leadership I'm talking about in the aftermarket is, look, none of us are perfect. And it takes patience to be a parent. It takes patience to be a leader and develop. Are the young people coming into the industry today different? Yes, they are. Grandchildren different? Yes, they are. Do they challenge me? Yes. That's what I'm talking about, potential. It's not just a feel-good concept. It's real life. And I worry about people in society today that no one's ever opened that door to show that vision and say, yes, you can.
Dr. Thomas, it's a great story. I love your story. But it looks like John was admitting that he was going to change. And I think that's part of one of the biggest problems that we have in our industry is that there are too many that are on autopilot.
That is absolutely correct. It's having that desire to change, number one, and be more, to be that lifelong learner, but also to have that mentor behind you, encouraging you, guiding you, and offering feedback. To Dr. John's point, we all make mistakes, right? We're all far from perfect, but when someone that's compassionately guiding you, what a huge difference it can make for us.
And Thomas, you're right. I mean, employees talk to me, you know, I do executive coach. They hate the annual review process because it's like going to a dentist without Novocaine. And if your wife only tells you she loves you once a year, I think you're in trouble.
Why have I never heard it like that before?
Talk to your employees. You're displeased about something. Talk to them right away. Say, I like to make, you know, don't criticize them. I like to make an observation. Am I correct or not correct? Because I love to learn from people with all kinds of backgrounds, you know, and again, you have to keep your mind open and say, some people in life think they have all the answers. I always say, some people think they have the name of the unknown soldier. And none of us have the answer. And so to Thomas's point is we have to be able to control our ego. We all have an ego, and there's good parts of ego and there's bad parts of ego. But the ego is, okay, I want to be the best person I can be, but not at the expense of anybody else.
You know, as cars become more advanced, manufacturers are getting sole access to important vehicle data, while independent repair shops and vehicle owners are increasingly locked out from accessing vital repair data. But who owns the data? The vehicle owner or the manufacturer? When it comes to vehicle repair, the fight to secure data access for vehicle owners and their chosen independent repair facilities continues. U.S. Representative Bobby L. Rush introduced the Right to Equitable and Professional Auto Industry Repair, acronym REPAIR, R-E-P-A-I-R, Act to the U.S. House on February 3, 2022. The bill is aimed at giving small independent repair shops the same kind of data access that licensed vehicle dealerships already receive. Americans should not be forced to bring their cars to more costly and inconvenient dealerships for repairs when independent auto repair shops are often cheaper and far more accessible, said Rep. Rush. But as cars become more advanced, manufacturers are getting sole access to important vehicle data, while independent repair shops are increasingly locked out. The Right to Repair legislation should protect a pro-consumer and competitive motor vehicle repair market, provide independent repair shops with the rights to critical information, tools, and equipment needed to repair modern cars and trucks. The Right to Repair legislation should task the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration with developing cybersecurity standards and guidelines to protect vehicle data and systems when repair and maintenance data is accessed by vehicle owners. Please join the fight and help support Right to Repair by completing the form at www.autoadvocacy.org/NAPA, which sends a letter to your member of Congress today. Right to Repair legislation protects your access to vehicle data and scan tools. This is critically important for the automotive heavy-duty paint and body industries. AutoCareAdvocacy.org/NAPA. I got a question for Dr. Thomas. Listen, Leadership 2.0. is really an incredible aftermarket learning. It's a year-long program. I do believe it still is. You meet twice. You got a project in the middle. You present the project, and then somebody has a chance, I think, to go to, what, Apex to present? Am I right?
No, we no longer do that. We used to present at GAS. We don't do that anymore. We don't, but they present their team projects on the last day of our time together on the second week. We vote for that team presentation, and the winner is awarded with mutual respect from their peers and colleagues and fellow students at 2.0.
I guess where I'm driving to is you must be very much in charge or responsible for the topics and the things that you're covering in Leadership 2.0. And we'll get a link in the show notes on getting there and taking a look at it. When you hear Dr. John talk, you're plugged in, you're reading articles, you're very connected in the industry. Are these kinds of trends that are going on affect the kind of classes and the people that you get to come in and talk?
Sure. So I have recently done some research on organizational culture, you know, a culture of an organization, shared values, shared beliefs, shared behaviors. You know, that comes from the top. That has to come from the leader of the organization. So CARM, the pandemic had such a adverse impact on our organizations. You know, when folks first started to work remote, it was new, it was bright, it was shiny. We're using drive times to get to work earlier, and that was all motivated. But now as we are several years in, we're finding that isolation, if you will, is contributing to decreased levels of efficiency. Social isolation, anxiety, and our depression are increasing. And it's just because they don't have that human touch. and the camaraderie, if you will, of the workplace. And this is critical. And in 2.0, it's what we encourage our learners to discover about this and this hidden gem of a leader that's inside you that we're trying to bring out, that we're trying to present techniques that will help you be this person that'll go back to your organizations after the session and make a huge difference and create a culture where the values are respect and courtesy and those type of things. It's so important. And without them, organizations struggle. They may be successfully financially, but as far as providing life satisfaction for their team members, they're falling short of the mark.
Yeah, I have a comment to make on this. As Leadership 2.0 is all about personal development, business development, leadership development, I can't help but think it's very much like Toastmasters to gain confidence in speaking, because we have a remarkable results radio virtual Toastmasters organization. And it's great. Been in it for 9 months now, and I do this for a living, and man, did I learn stuff and gain confidence in certain areas. And that's kind of like what 2.0 is all about.
It is. Again, it's bringing out that hidden gem inside of individuals, developing their tactical leadership skills for them to go back and make a difference in their organizations.
And aren't there suppliers willing to give scholarships to bring service professionals and technicians in?
So we have a very robust relationship with the University of the Aftermarket Foundation, who supports our Leadership 2.0 and our Heavy Duty 2.0 cohorts with scholarships. AWDA supports it. And the AWDA scholarship program is specifically designed to bring the technician into this coursework because they offer such a robust perspective of the industry. They see it differently than the rest of us. They're on the ground level, if you will. And let's just face it, Carm, all the channels of distribution above them are anxious to get their perspective. And how can we develop meaningful content for that relationship between our warehouse distributors, between the manufacturers, the program distribution groups, and that professional technician? It's critical.
How many were at the last session?
We kind of swung and missed at the last session. I believe we had 2, where our goal is to have 8.
And the class is what, about 50?
This year's class was 31.
31. And you had 2 technicians, and the goal is to have 8.
That is correct. So, Carm, you're touching on, so we typically want a class of 40. We want 8 technicians. We want 20% of that class to be professional technicians.
If someone was listening now and say, wow, I've got to get involved or I've got to go to a supplier, point is that where do we go to get more information?
Well, I'm happy to provide any information that any of your listeners would need. Certainly our friends at AWDA, our program distribution groups, are well aware of this program. And we are already, even though the first week of Leadership 2.0, 24-25 is in August, we are already recruiting for this valuable on content from the professional technician.
There's still openings for August?
There are.
Okay. And is there a website that we could go to at least see what's going on with it or even maybe submit an application?
You know, Carm, I don't have that. Forgive me for that. I don't have that, but it's something that I can certainly get for you.
Okay, great. I'm just assuming that someone can just go into, I just drew a blank here, University of the Aftermarket Leadership 2.0. I'm sure something would come up.
Yes. And Carm, have that individual contact their local WD that's in a program distribution group. All of those folks are aware of the program. Point well taken. We should have a special link for that. So assignment number 1 for me. So thank you for that.
The power of the human spirit. I just always love to hear you talk about that.
If you think about people that come together with a common cause, John F. Kennedy said, we're going to go to the moon. I'm old enough to remember when he said that. And some people were doubting. He put together the best minds in the world, not just Americans. Guess what? We went to the moon. So the human spirit has no limits. If you think about technology today, if you think about medicine, I remember when polio was a fear of any child growing up. Today, God willing, it's under control. If you think about the changes in the society today and hopefully going forward, the human spirit is like the human potential, Carm. It has no limits. If we collectively put our minds, our hearts, and our souls together, and I'm a humanist, I believe there's more good in people than bad. Have I been hurt by people? Absolutely. Have I been taken advantage of? Absolutely. Do I carry a grudge? Not so much anymore. I'm a Sicilian. I kind of got over it. But if you approach life that way to say, look, we're all here to make life better. That's what we do as parents. That's what we do as leadership. And so the human spirit comes from the brain, the heart, and the soul. This human spirit's a gift. I mean, you talk about attitude. That's a choice we make every morning. You wake up, I say to myself, I'm thankful for the day, and I'm going to make it a good day. So that's what I mean about, and you read stories about Helen Keller, if you ever heard it or watched a movie about Helen Keller, and Annie Sullivan was her teacher, and Annie taught her, she taught her Helen Keller to speak, to write, and she had a wonderful life, even though she was severely handicapped. That's just an extreme example. That's back to the human potential. You know, that's why they're all connected. The human spirit, the potential, lifelong learning are not just nice words and concepts. That's the essence of humanity. And we all, believe it or not, we're all going to have a legacy. And people are going to look back and say, well, did this person make a difference? Did this not make a difference? And then we have our own legacy that we think about. And I look at things I've done in my life that I wish I had done. And hopefully I get better at that. And so that's what I mean about the human spirit. It's just like Sunday's a Super Bowl Sunday and teams come together and everybody pulls their weight. Sometimes the best team doesn't win, but they overcome the other team's talents because they have a common goal. I've seen that in industry. I've seen that when we all remember when companies cut prices and you had to compete or go out of business. And I've seen people come together and say, okay, how do we compete? And again, an example I had that when I was with the companies. President said, John, we got to lay off 10% because so-and-so cut their prices. And I said, give me a couple of weeks. Call people together, cross-functionally. We came up with cost reductions. One person lost their job. And so you got, again, that's thinking, is that being a lifelong learner? I think so. Is that endorsing the human spirit and putting people before profits? Yes. And Carl and Thomas, I always wonder when people put their budgets together at year end or before the year end, is there a goal in there about people development?
You know what I find out? I love to listen to John talk. He says, we have to cut payroll by 10%. He goes, give me a minute. And he goes back. He works with the people. There are so many people that probably owe you their job, but they don't even know that you had that. You decided to figure out, you pull the team together a common goal. You said that. And Thomas, you were talking about culture before. Together with a common goal, probably an awful lot of value sets to discuss, but there are too many service professionals that are running around and running their business in a non-culture culture.
I'll take your word for that, Carm. I admire the work that they do, but certainly there are programs within the University of the Aftermarket that challenges them to become good business people as well. Look, everyone acknowledges their incredible skill. Look, it's not easy these days to diagnose a vehicle with the computers and all the things that are going on. I can't even speak to it because that is not one of my skill sets. We know that is so difficult. But then what we bring to that party, Carm, is that, hey, we'll train them financially. We'll train them how to look at a cash flow statement, a balance sheet, and financial acumen is a huge part of our Leadership 2.0 and 101 programs to help develop them. Again, our goal is to contribute to the human condition, that life satisfaction, if you will. It's my passion. And certainly we want to equip our professional technicians to be successful on the highest level, financially, leadership, all of it.
Well, you both are doing such great things for our industry. John, are you still working hard every day or did you slow down?
I've slowed down a little bit, but I don't want to become irrelevant. And plus, I try to keep my mind active. So I'm still doing executive coaching. I do a little bit of recruiting. I help people pro bono who've lost their jobs. I write resumes for them and do some interviewing skills training. And I still write articles for the Aftermarket News. And on a personal side, I've written 2 children's books on kindness because my 16-year-old granddaughter, who's my hero, Sophia, has type 1 diabetes. And I'm hopefully going to raise money to fight diabetes with my books. But the industry's in my blood. It's been good to my family, helped me raise my children, good standard of living. And so people say, John, when are you going to retire? I said, I'm retired. I'm doing what I want to do. I work for a good boss, me. So if I can, I just want to hitchhike on what Thomas said. Part of a Leadership 2.0 is people come to that and they may or may not be quite sure why they're there. And Thomas and I and some of the other presenters, You've heard me say it, Thomas, the first day of session, I ask the question because I like participation. I tell people I'm not a talking head. I'm here because I want to learn. I'm going to share ideas, but I want to get some feedback here. And so we work very hard to let them know they're there because A, the company they set them thinks a lot of them. And this may blow your mind, Carm. They're surprised. And then I say, raise hands. How many of you get enough compliments? Sadly, maybe, right, Thomas? Maybe 20, 30% will raise hands. A compliment is sincere. Can't be a phony. Can't be a con job. For God's sake, compliment. I compliment. I went to UPS today. Young man waited on me over there, probably 22 years old, whatever. I went to his boss and I said, David does an outstanding job every time I'm here. And David could hear me. And so we make sure at Leadership Tour 2.0 that this is about you. This 4 or 5 days is about. And then I ask the question, how many of you have enough time to do all the things you want to do? Zero hands go up because we're all time poor. I know you well enough, Carm. I know you, Thomas, my friend. You guys work 7 days a week like I do, even though I'm semi-retired. I'm on a computer on Sunday. My wife said, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing some fun stuff. She said, get off. Said, okay, honey.
Have you been at my house watching, hearing?
Yeah, there's a camera at your house.
Yeah, I thought so.
Wow. Yeah, and so leadership. And then Thomas could tell you this. The first day of the session, I hand out, and James O'Dell and Thomas helped me. We give everybody an envelope. And I say, at the end of the day today, you write yourself a letter of what you want to achieve this year. Personal and professional. Give me the letters back. I seal it in front of them. I'm not going to read it. And sometime when I feel like, I'll mail it to you. It may be a month, maybe 6 months. Who knows? I go to Apex, Carm. 1,000 people with the first night of the cocktail party, right? The guy comes up, Dr. John, can I talk to you? I said, sure. Goes in a sport coat, ratty looking piece of paper. 1997, Dr. John. This is what I wrote about myself. Self-development. The goals we set for ourselves are more endeared to us than the business. And I'm not saying business goals are not important. But my modest friend Thomas hasn't said, Leadership 2.0 is about the entire person. And again, companies forget that when they hire somebody, they hire their technical skill. This is a good accountant. I said, yeah, they are. Guess what? They're also a person with interests, with ideas, with concerns, maybe with fears. And I'm not trying to get too heavy here, but when you manage people, the way they go home at night, the way they talk to their family is a direct proportion of how you treat them.
This was a very, very powerful last 5 minutes. I love what you said. It's all about the person. And you go to 2.0 because it's all about you. But what I took away was I needed to be a better leader way back when I went to 2010. It was the precursor name before it was 2.0. And I have to tell you, it's got to sink in what John just said. It's about the person. There's a work family that sometimes we totally forget that they have particular needs just like your home family would, but we don't necessarily respect it, take care of it, talk to them as if we were nurturing people and they were here working for you, all about maybe professional, personal gain, finance, or career. And we have to do a much better job inside of our industry. Now, listen, I know the top 20%, they're all on board. They get this. But so much of the goal that I have has always been that next 10 or 15% in the industry who listen and say, wow, there's something I just learned. Listen to learn just one thing, as I've always said. But to everyone's point, there's so much incoming. We're so time challenged that, great idea, write it down, and it fades. And I guess one of the biggest things that we have to think about is how do we take some critically important things we need to do in our lives and get it on that top 10 list?
So, Carm, I'll just say this. I would love for the executives listening to your show today to ask themselves this question. How can I contribute to the life satisfaction of my team members? How can we change how we integrate our organizational culture into that question, and how can they start to make a difference? Because the typical CEO will say, oh my goodness, we can't afford stuff like that. My response to that, Carm, is you can't afford not to do that. And training and development is key. Research shows that retention, employee morale, employee engagement, proficiency is closely correlated to high levels of personal development. And all of this would just contribute to what they're trying to accomplish, but they're just going about it in a different way, a more meaningful way, if you will.
This is an inspiring episode. I think it's tight, it's succinct. think there's been a lot of passion served here from both John and Thomas. I got so many other things going on in my mind, but I love where we left this thing. Contribute to life satisfaction. Another huge takeaway from you, Dr. Thomas. I appreciate that. Guys, thank you so much for being here and getting us up on board with Leadership 2.0 and all the great HR wisdom and the people passion that my friend, Dr. John Passante, has. John, you always so passionate and so profound. And maybe it's not because you're Sicilian. I just think you were born to change people's lives.
Oh, thank you. You touched my heart. You're a special man. I remember when you first started doing what you're doing, and you and I spent some time talking about it, Carm, and you're making a difference. And that's what it's all about. I mean, that's what it's all about. And real quick story, if I could, I was with a major after OE company, and the chairman of the board called me over one day, president, and said, "I don't get the aftermarket." His whole life, he was a GM. He said, "Look out the window. What do you see?" Got up from his million-dollar desk, and I said, look out the window. He said, "I said trees." "No, look closer, further." "Well, I see cars and trucks." I said, "Good observation." I said, "That's the aftermarket. 24/7, there's cars and trucks going up that highway on I-75. The aftermarket keeps them on the road 24/7, 365 days a year. That's an awesome, awesome responsibility. And we got to get that message to the young people joining our industry. Is the aftermarket changing? Yeah. Is electronics coming? Yeah. The driverless car? Yeah, probably. But there's always going to be an aftermarket. I recruited high schools, Carm, because high schools always want somebody to come in and talk to the students. And I tell them about the excitement of the aftermarket. And it is a technical, it's both technical and practical. And anyway, I can't express what I feel about the aftermarket. But that's, again, I'm excited to be here today with you and my friend Thomas and you, my friend Carm. Let's do it again.
You just nailed it. Storytelling. I think we're not doing enough of it as an industry to get into the high schools and get into the colleges. In fact, oh God, get up on my soapbox again. I was in speaking to a college group, me and a whole bunch of other shop owners, about 2-3 months ago. And these shop owners were introduced as mom and pops. And I said, John and Tom, I says, "I can't let this go." And I had to get up. And I had to get up and I had to say, whoa. Because the week before, there were a whole bunch of dealers there. And of course, now then the independents were invited the next week to talk to this particular class. And I said, "I can't let that go." To your point, this industry is big. It is professional. And it is. And if we pay attention to being great leaders and the technology that's coming at us, and we become more agile and all-encompassing and smart with really great cultures, and we can go on and on. There's another 100 things. But this was great. Dr. Thomas Litzinger, AAP, the Executive Director, Director and Chair of the University of the Aftermarket, Northwood University, and Dr. John Passante, a legacy automotive aftermarket HR professional and the president and CEO of the Organizational Development Group. Guys, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having us, Carm.
Thank you so much. Thank you. An honor.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.